Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In today's episode, we welcome back in the one and only, the one in, well, I don't know how many billion. No, just incomparable to every other human being, sentient being in the entire universe. My beautiful queen, Matilda Crocini. Bellissima, you're very welcome back on.
Thank you. Thank you. That's some very good introduction.
Yeah, I just have to butter you up because I've sort of noticed, you know, we've done a few episodes together. And every single episode, like next episode, you get more bold and daring and uncontrollable. I feel like Dana White, like trying to deal with Conor McGregor at the weigh-in. it's like, I don't know what's coming next from you. So I'm really just like, just trying to butter you up, get you feeling good, the feel good vibes. And maybe, no, I don't even think that's going to make you behave.
I don't think so.
No, nothing. It's a fool's errand. What was I even thinking? All joking aside, and it's actually very nice on the topic that it is to just lead with that humor, because maybe that's the best medicine in many senses for so many things in life and in marriage. It's the sacred topic of supporting men and obviously by extension their beautiful potent queens in the ultra challenging meeting, the ultra challenging issue in marriage of a husband loving his queen who has been sexually abused. Obviously, the hashtag Me Too movement, and there's been many different movements. That's one, the one that's sort of most famous in recent years, has brought to the surface the staggering amount of women around the world that have been sexually abused. So it's a major issue, and why I really wanted to bring it in here is it's an issue that's not really spoken about in the sense of, well, what's the husband's perspective in that? You know, what's his experience in holding space for such a wounding and trying in long-term, deep, intimate relating, meeting that challenge in a tactful, conscious way that can keep both partners feeling safe and, most important, feeling a deepening connection, rather than what so often happens is there's a progressive distancing as a result of wounding. So I just want to like extend my absolute bows and total gratitude to you, Bellissima, for every episode, but this one particularly, it's such a literally deeply intimate sharing from you. So I just want to recognize you and thank you on behalf of myself, but on behalf of every single husband that's going to be listening to this episode, that's going to take so much for it. Like, thank you for leading with such courage to come on talking to this topic with us.
Oh yeah, thank you for that. It's just such an important topic. It's actually an honor to get to speak to it, and you know, supporting couples in dealing with it and being able to open up to each other when there has been such a trauma and there's those wounds in the system. So I'm very happy to be here speaking to that.
Can you give some bit of background to the guys listening in? And there is the context that it's a very intimate and obviously intimate slash private topic, but to the levels that you're comfortable speaking to it without revealing too much for certain precise personal reasons, can you give a general context as to sort of like the details or the length of time when it happened, what your experience was with it?
Yeah. My personal experience was when I was about 12. A man was introduced in my family and became part of the family. And There were no boundaries, really. It was like this person was introduced as if it was meant to be there, as if he was a member of the family, although he wasn't. And so there were no boundaries. I remember at the time, my bedroom didn't even have a door. That's just how the layout of the house was, which is sort of fine when it's family members being around, but it's not really when there's strangers in the house. And this person had a really good way of getting very close to people, and he started by becoming some kind of friend, and then that just developed into something that clearly I didn't really understand as a child, but it went on for about 3 years. And my way out of that was I just got myself a boyfriend at the age of between 15 and 16. I got a boyfriend, and at that point, this man just stepped back and stopped sexually abusing me. And he remained in the family, and he remained in the family for a good few years after that. So I still had to be in contact with this person, but the actual physical sexual abuse had stopped. But it was very challenging in so many ways, and it was also, I think, the main thing for me in the whole thing was how confusing the entire situation was, because some members of my family knew that was happening and did nothing to stop it, and some knew that has happened but still welcomed this person within the family to remain. And so for a very long time I didn't even think there was an abuse in a funny way. So, but like, yeah, I don't know. It was a very confusing thing, and for a very, very, very long time I didn't know how much that had actually impacted my life, my experience then in relating with others, with life, with men, with intimacy. It has had a massive impact, and it has taken me a long time to work through it, to understand it fully. There's still aspects where I know the effects are still there.
My curiosity, and we're going off-piste skiing. Is that the term? Or backcountry skiing in this, guys? I just want to give the context to guys listening in. We speak to certain topics that come up, but as we spontaneously go with the conversation, I just really want to keep that context that I want you, policeman, to feel safe, that if my spontaneous curiosity in a moment, if you feel uncomfortable, I know you don't need my permission to do it, and you do it anyway. But just say no. And my curiosity is, at what point, and this is to really try and I know we'll speak to this, and I'll speak to part, it's like it's so important, I feel, from the male masculine pole in the relationship to gain some intimate understanding as to the lived experience of, you know, like this in this case it'd be vicariously through another woman, but to build some foundation of what that inner world experience was, even pre-marriage, you know, what's the lead up of that inner world like? What I'm curious about, Amore, is, you know, at what point did you become aware consciously that, this is the lived effects of that having happened to me? When was that awakening point in your journey in life?
I can't tell you a point specific. What I can say is that for a very long time, I like straight away, actually, pretty much straight away from the moment the situation ended of actual physical abuse, I was able to speak about it, not with everyone, but with a few people, like, for example, my boyfriend knew, my best friend knew, eventually healers or therapists that I've seen knew, of course, I spoke to that. And I became really good at speaking about it. And so I thought, this is it sorted. There's no effects. Like, that's just something that happened to me. I wasn't even sure what happened because it's only later on doing a lot of embodiment work that I realized I had forgotten. Like, I was so not present in my body when those things were happening to me that I didn't remember what was actually happening. Memories started coming back. So it was a journey from understanding that just speaking about it was not enough, because yeah, I think there were episodes in our intimate relationship where yeah, I thought I felt I had ways of going about intimacy that were just me, that's just the way I was built. I thought some parts of my body didn't have a lot of sensation, so I thought there was just personal preference and stuff like that. And then as memories started coming through, as I came into my body a little bit more, as I did more work, I started realizing how well those were all the effects of it. And then linking it in also with a general sense of unsafety in my life experience. I remember you actually watched some video. I can't remember who this video was from, but it was some expert speaking to the levels of feeling unsafe and the anxiety in sexually abused women. And it was the first time I actually made the link. I was like, yeah, wow, I'm constantly anxious. I don't think I've ever felt safe 1 minute of my life, at least as far as memory goes. So yeah, that I started making the link with that. So clearly there was still stuff in my body that was carrying the consequences of that. I don't know, have I answered your
Yeah,
question?
I definitely personally resonate with the constant anxiety and that level of unsafety. I suppose that'll bring us naturally into the chapter, which will be of greatest interest to guys listening in. It's like, and then you came to Ireland, and I still feel that you were subconsciously searching for like a Bahamut of a great, incredible Titan of a husband. Like I really, I know, I know you still claim you had other reasons for coming to Ireland, but deep down, I like you were coming to find me. I know it. The sun, moon, and stars had aligned. You knew there was a great guy in Ireland.
Obviously.
Obviously. You see, the buttering up at the beginning did work because you could have hacked my ego majorly there. The buttering up, it did work. Wow.
Yeah, it
Oh,
did. Because I
wow.
was going to give you
I
some
know.
smart answer. Then I was like, oh no, come on, it's okay.
Oh, good. I'm just wondering. It probably the buttering up, it's no, it's not going to work for the whole, but for the whole episode. But anyway, it worked for the first what is it, 10, 15 minutes. So we met. We met, came together. Initial days, sort of all were going good. I do remember like the exact specifics, but it was quite a dramatic shift in family dynamics, which like co-involved this man at the time, and you were full frontal, like from night one. And I was like, game ball, you know, bring it on. It's like I can I can be with you through anything. I can be through any conversation and anything. And we fell in love. We moved in together really quickly. And obviously we've lasted the test of time. What was, you know, just to give a reminder for guys maybe that haven't heard the story or have spoken to this maybe at some points, we got married our style after, what was it? It was like six and a half months together. Overlooking the Atlantic Ocean after doing 35 days of the pilgrimage to Santiago, and we went beyond three more days just for a little bit more suffering on our feet to Finisterre, overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, and we exchanged our own personal vows that we had written along the way in the most beautiful manner possible. What for you were those early days? And like, this is really getting in, and this is the bit where, okay, the buttering up at the beginning. It's like, hey, I got the nice soft sort of response there a little bit ago, but I really want you to support me and every guy listening in, you know, part of Be the Husband, she brags about like the core ethos to remind guys listening in is like the practice of heroic humility. It's really leaning into hummus, the ground of truth of where you're actually at. I know that did not come spontaneously to me. It's been the last number of years where I've opened up my nervous system to my blind spots. But bringing full flame, queenly feedback, queenly, you know, interpretation of those early days, through the eyes of you were relating with me at this point. So you had this wounding amongst other, issues that was in the tapestry of your, the tapestry of your life. What were the early days like relating with me? What was that initial feel? Falling in love. Obviously, there was good stuff on the table. What was the initial days like? And when was the change? Because I know there was a particular change in sort of how I was relating with you with that issue and with many other issues. Just give us your view of those early days, maybe first year or so.
Well,
I'm nervous. You see, I'm nervous. I just know that laugh. I'm like... Okay, maybe I want to retract back. I want to butter you up a little bit more. Go
well,
on, baby.
There, it's funny. There's like, yeah, as you said, I was very upfront. I think night one, within the limits of my English at the time, or maybe our first date a week later, I was very upfront. I told you my family is a mess, and I've been sexually abused, and I've suffered such and such and such, and this is what I want, and this is what I'm looking for. Sort of, are you in or are you out? It was very, I remember that. Like, that was my approach. That's when I'm saying that I was really good at talking about it. I had no issues, and I know I came across really well that way, because it's like, if this woman can just talk about all of this stuff that easily, I mean, she sorted, which was very, very, very far from the truth. So it's like we've had two separate stories that run parallel to one another. One is the beautiful romance, like sort of meeting, love at first sight, and just enjoying time together a lot, and there's a lot of wonderful aspects to that first year and all the years after, of course, but a lot of beautiful stuff. And then there is the other story that is, you couldn't have met me at a worse time. Like, it was like everything around me was falling apart. I broke up with someone just a month before. The man that had been sexually abusing me when I was a child was full on deciding that he was going to stalk me and possibly get married with me, because I had been single for a month. That was my strategy. I had I had boyfriends from the age of 16 all the way to a month before meeting you. That month has been the only month since I was 15 that I've been single because that was my shield. I didn't know that at the time. Clearly, that was not conscious. I realized that afterwards, years later, as I went through healing and different work. So I needed a new shield, obviously, and you came along. And so there's the beautiful love story, and then there's the I needed someone there, and I latched on. And you needed someone there too. You know your story as well. And so we fitted really well in the roles of you needed someone to save, and I needed desperately to be saved. And we really went well for a little while with that until I think at some point you constantly trying to save in me became a real big issue because you were your approach was very righteous and there was a lot. I remember feeling like I'm feeling really bad about myself. It's like I have these things and I don't think you really understand what's going on. I didn't really understand what was going on inside of me. I wasn't very good, obviously, at explaining it, but it started this dynamic of I wasn't anymore very interesting because you wanted to save me. I became an issue that you just had to deal with. And that was the perception I had. Yeah. Does that answer?
Yeah, and it really it's an important part, and like I find to speak this to our journey, you've brought it in there. It's like there's like parallel worlds going together, and just to build a little bit of context in for guys, that has definitely been a deep part of our healing journey, not just with relating with this. You know, it's like, of course, we're bringing this in on the topic of you know, supporting your queen who has been sexually abused, but there's a lot of whole marriage relevance for this. Actually, if some guys are listening in, and it's like, oh, actually, they mightn't resonate. Their wife, their queen, mightn't have been sexually abused, or they might be a little bit unsure. There's tons of whole life relevance in this, and a big part of that relevance is there is persona to persona fitting in. You know, there is this shadow part of our personalities match. You speak with any psychotherapist, any, you know, person that has done deep work or supports people through deep work, there is that part as well, always. And if you don't bring that into the room, a real r healing part for myself and you and Mormio, like, was just getting honest with that. It's like, hey, there was all this love, but there was also all of this other stuff that was keeping us cemented together as well. And not to deny that, not to not speak it, not to speak, it's all just airy fairy, pure, perfect, unconditioned love. Like, yeah, there was beautiful stuff at the center of it, but just to start having the courage within yourself to speak it as it is, but not in a resentful way. And if you become aware of those parts, you know, listening into our story, that you can go, but that's okay as well. That's inevitable. You know, we've all grown up in a profoundly sick society, so trauma is there in the nervous systems of all people. But my personal thing that comes up with that, baby, like I do resonate with that. You know, what you're saying is like it was cool, this helper in the beginning, that's what you were looking for. But then I got stuck in that. I look back and go, you know, I felt like a superhero in the beginning of a relationship. It was like he came, he saw, he conquered type of a feel. It was like anything I did around you loved. Anything I did said around you appreciated within reason, but it was like predominantly that was the experience early days. But then there was this like backlash, and that sting I didn't know how to take, because it's like I really like when I set the context here about, you know, heroic humility, I had zero of that. Zero. Nada. Niente. I remember you used to, like, your early days of feminine, what I now call feminine feedback, which is like this beautiful, like it's your greatest gift to me. And I open-heartedly receive it. Well, my practice is to do it.
Most
of the time, asterisks, most of the time. And that's the practice, is to open-heartedly receive it. I had none of that. Feminine feedback back then was criticism by default. That's just it. It's like, why are you on my case? You know, and this is highly relevant, you know, just treading into context within our story, but like knowing guys around the planet, the vast majority of men on the planet would fit under what Dr. Robert Glover describes the Mr. Nice Guy persona. Which is like this feminine pleasing. We were predominantly reared by our mothers, and then early days in school, still formative years, predominantly female teachers. So we ended up with this sort of like good boy, bad boy role. And like, it, you know, I'll do all the things to please you. But our greatest drop and our greatest emotional despair is when we perceive the feminine turns against it. Us. It's like our attachment needs. I'm a good boy. And then it's like, I'm still being a good boy. And that describes my feeling, which was, oh, I've been a good boy. And for the first 5, 6, 7 months, this is working. You love me. And shit, I'm still doing this. I'm using those same strategies. I'm saying those same things. And now it's not working. I had no awareness of it at the time, but that was devastating for me and really deeply confusing. And it brought about eventually, slowly but surely over the years, like quite a deep background resentment where I'm helping you. There was this arrogance within me. And like, as guys are listening in, like really just get honest with yourselves. You know, you can vicariously listen in, but just get really involved. Ask the questions of yourself, how deeply resonant are you with this story? But I got deeply resentful because deep down, I was in that hero mode. I'm like the knight in shining armor. I can look back and hold my hand up and go, I had this like really rooted perception of, you were the one that was fucked up. I'm here trying to save you. I'm here doing all of these great things. I'm here, the one having like all of this patience with you and your eventually, like using your words, like that constant anxiety, the unsafety, et cetera, et cetera. You're the one with issues. Don't be blaming me. That's that righteous part where it was like, hey, I'm right. Like, what the fuck? How dare you turn against me? I just really wanted to give that. That was my, I have those words with full clarity now, but I know back then, it's very easy to say it now. Back then, I had no, like zero awareness of how damaging my perception was, and how catastrophically difficult that must have been for you to have this man that loves you. And then you start giving any bit of feedback and he feels this massive rejection of his personhood. And sort of like, I can imagine my tone of voice, my eyes, my face, my posture, all of these signs of heart closure that I now know technically so well. I can imagine that was exceptionally hard for you to find out this new part of me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was the fact that you never were vulnerable. Like you had no faults. I had all the faults, and which, I mean, I also come from having wounding with my mother and being a narcissistic mother and stuff. So that obviously added up to the wounding of the trauma of the sexual abuse. So that's in the mix, which, I can't say that didn't count, of course, both things in together. But when we spoke about that, it was like partially because I came saying, you know, it's sorted. I speak to the sexual abuse. I can speak about it. I'm fine. So I think that played a part in it, because I was trying to be strong, posing myself in a way that that was sorted. But also there was an approach to it where if I did try to get vulnerable, if I did try to open up, you were immediately fixing it. You were immediately giving me very specific things I had to do, or a book I had to read, or, you know, just sit and meditate for like 2 hours and you'll be fine. And it's like, no, and no, this isn't working. I think I've even tried to do certain things. I even tried to read some of the books. I tried to meditate. I tried to do the things you thought would work, because maybe they worked for you partially or in some ways. But that just wasn't for me. And I never felt understood in that sense. I never felt, in those years, I do now, things have changed dramatically, of course, but in those years, I never felt like there was any understanding. Everything in your life was perfect. Your family was perfect. You were perfect. You had done all the perfect things to learn about, you know, psychology and the inner world and meditation and different things. And the only thorn in your side was the fact that your woman was broken. And that resentment stayed with us for years. Like I know I could feel that in every moment that there was a challenging conversation, all that resentment came back immediately to the surface. It was really hurtful every single time. It's like it brought so much distance.
I these conversations, they're so firstly revealing for me. Again, it's like just a container here of just a podcast, a container we're having, and we're just doing this deep dive. There has been no escape in hundreds of our conversations, of course, but it's like it's revealing. Like when you mentioned, and like we've spoken to this, I feel high chance is just when the more embodiment practice I do, I'm feeling it more. My whole body went through a ripple of cringe when you were saying, oh, you know, just go off and meditate for 2 hours or read that book and like you'll be fixed. The cringe is, oh my God, that was me. Like that was my body. That was my nervous system. I was saying that shit. And it's like knowing what I now know is like, wow, you know, I remember at the time it was like Eckhart Tolle and, you know, The Power of Now, A New Earth. And I really had my magician archetype, my rational mind had sort of taken that as a new language. It's like, okay, you know, I've got the language of enlightenment. You know, it's like, just surrender. You know, it's like, oh, it's pain body. Well, just hold space, sit with it. And when it fucks off, you're enlightened. You know, it's like this exceptional blind spot of spiritual arrogance that my persona had taken on a new vocabulary and could spout it out, you know, thinking I was living it out. Yet, you know, I think I'm beginning the last few years to slowly unpack some of the depth of that, of those teachings, what surrender truly means, what presence truly means. We'll actually speak to that a little bit further in this conversation, but the devastating effects of having that level of arrogance and hearing you, it's like a grief is coming up in me going, wow, you know, that wasn't weeks, that was years. Mm-hmm. Years that you had with me where that resentment was there. And I know Now, you know what I scribbled down in the notes before is like this mother-son projectile vomit that I had, and I did not know was the issue. But like working with guys around the world now, and in my own inner work, is like I just know is it's like it's coming from that moment in the last few years where you gave me that incredible queen feedback, where it was like, stop bloody talking, and you probably use many other words that we won't repeat today, but it was like really in my fucking face. It was like, stop mentioning, 13 years. That's not the number of years. Start telling me, what was it, 37 years. Like, start talking to me about the real number. It's like, I listened to you then, but just stop this whole bullshit of, 13 years. It's not 13 years is your issue. And it was really that changed my entire life. That feedback, that moment, I speak to it so often. I bring it up in conversation with you, acknowledging you for the potency. My entire nervous system re sh just shifted to a new realization that day where, wow, it has nothing to do with 13 years. But I remember I was continually bringing that up. It's like, oh, the 13 years and or the 14 years and whatever. But it was that realization slowly but surely. But it's like the only thing that's coming out in our moments of heart closure, my heart closure had nothing to do with how you were showing up or not showing up. My heart closure had all to do with my own undealt with wounds, which were mother son. It's that those initial years were relating. She's the woman at the center of my universe at that time, and my nervous system adapting to, well, this is how masculine feminine dynamics happen, and hey, is this natural? Happens every man, but it can seem weird. We end up projecting that onto our wives because it's like the formative years when we set our beliefs. So, oh, if I'm meant to relate with the feminine this way, okay, well, that's the patterns. And we don't go through an initiatory rite of passage, et cetera, that reshifts the nervous system. So we just keep relating with the feminine, and that feminine figure becomes our beautiful queen. But it's like that system of relating wasn't working with you. It worked relatively in a way, puppy dog with, mother, puppy dog, that worked. But puppy dog is not what you were looking for. You were looking for alpha wolf. I didn't know how to access that. So my puppy dog syndrome was getting upset, was like sucking his thumb in the corner energetically, was going off like in a like a little boyhood, what do you call it? Like a tyrannical just hissy fit of upset, of frustration, of like sort of stomping on the floor, like why. It sounds weird to put it, but that's the energetic of it. It's like, why is mommy not giving me the sweets? Why is mommy not giving me breast milk? It's like really, I say it with those terms because with guys, we all cringe together and we have a good laugh when I'm speaking one-on-one with guys because guys get it. It's like, yeah, there's some part of us gets so fucking upset because our queen of today is not giving us the good stuff. And we don't know. It's like this entitlement is brought up. Where I felt entitled to you, you should have just been giving me the good shit, especially because I was being a good boy. But that was all, without any exception, my undealt with wounds from childhood. And I did not know that. And I was projecting all this undealt with judgments on you from a sense of entitlement, and you weren't giving me the good stuff. So it's like, I know. I made a monster off you. That was the resentment part. It's like, you're this monster. I'm this good guy. I'm doing all these good things for you, and you're still not giving me the good shit. What the fuck? That's all your problem. I ultimately was like, I felt a victim of your brokenness. But what was really happening, and I can see this so clearly going back, is like, what was really happening was you were triggering my brokenness. You were triggering my deep undealt with shame. And I didn't know how to cope with that. So it was the only defense strategy without the tools, without men's work, without the awareness was blame you. Because I just can't go to my shame. I just, that's a pit of hopelessness inside of me that I would just get lost in. I can see this now. It's like, there's a part of me, it's like, I'd love to go back to that, like 2 years into a relationship, a year in, 3, 4 years, and just hug you and kiss you and fall in love with you in that moment. And with the tools I have now to go back and just go, baby, you know, it's like, I'm doing this weird, like, Back to the Future type shit. Like, this is me from the future. This is like, just to let you know, I will get there eventually. If I could just
Which
go for
would
like,
be so weird.
Weird. Okay, this has traumatized me even more.
Yeah.
apart from the weird sort of Back to the Future reference, there's just such a feeling of, there was so many years of pain and suffering that you had to go through, with me just projecting that on top of you. It's like, can't go back, but there's a grief there. It's like, it's, I wish it could have been different, but we are the people we are as a result of it as well.
One thing that came to mind when you were talking is the dynamic that happens is that the sexual abuse, you know, becomes an excuse. Like, I know that happened with us, but I'm sure that happens with others too. I know talking to women, that becomes a little bit of a dynamic that happens. So when we open up, so like I have some kind of level of being able to, I had even then, like some kind of level of being able to go, okay, well, you see, I'm like this at the moment because this is what happened to me when I was a child and I've suffered through that abuse and blah, blah, blah. And every time that I opened up to that bit of vulnerability, which it's not easy, it's really not easy, those became ammunitions. Every time that there was an opening, which is necessary, you see, like for a woman, for everyone, this is for everyone. I mean, men need to go through and open up vulnerably the same, but we're talking about women now. From my perspective, like we need to go through, open up, feel the pain, go through the really messy, uncomfortable, challenging, shitty parts, the storms, the dark parts, and from there the healing happens. If we don't open up to those depths of emotion, which really on the outside, I know it looks really scary and it's hard to deal with, but if we don't do that, we're not finding the pearls, we're not actually going for the healing. It remains all on surface level, it remains lip service, and it keeps coming back up. And eventually, if it doesn't come back up to the surface, it goes into the body and creates illnesses and all sorts of chronic pains and different things. So we need to go through that. But if every time that there is an attempt of going into that, that becomes a bullet that then gets back against us, that's where it gets really tricky. So I remember using, you know, speaking to the fact that I've been sexually abused and blah, blah, blah. And then in the next conversation, if I wanted to say something to you, if I wanted to express, I'm not happy with what you're doing, there's something here that doesn't work for me. Ah, well, of course, it's just because, you know, you and your sexual abuse, or, well, you know, like I can't even think now the exact example, but it would come back to me in a hurtful way, and it makes sense because you were saying you were trying to protect your own persona, you were trying to defend yourself from me triggering the bits in you that you needed to go explore and work with, and that obviously was uncomfortable. So we always try to avoid the uncomfortable parts. That makes a lot of sense, of course, but that's the dynamic that happens. It's like, so then eventually I stopped opening up. I went through a period of 2 or 3 years. I think actually the period, yeah, since we moved back to Ireland, so our eldest daughter was about 2 and ongoing all the way until our little one was born and stuff, where I completely stopped opening up vulnerably to anything, apart from in the moments where I was in a complete mess, which were not conscious opening, that was just a mess. But I stopped opening because I knew that every word I'd speak would then come back to me as an attack.
Yeah, this is a core pattern that is healing and revealing for me to go back through it. But for every guy listening in, it's, you know, in deep work in Heroic Husbands, we talk about the blame, shame, and claim ratio in heart closure. Does your story, what's your story in moments of heart closure with your queen? And like guys listening in, and whether you're living this out exactly with your queen or you're vicariously, like, just curious about the topic, no matter about your queen's status, if she's ever experienced sexual abuse or not, this is key. This is key to becoming the marriage transforming hero of your relationship, which is like dropping out of your head and into your heart. Ultimately coming from your heart, reawakening your heart brain, your gut brain, being in your body, is the only reason we blame. We go to blame thoughts, like Amore Mio, like Matilda's like demonstrating and opening up so much. The only reason we go to blame thoughts is protecting ourselves from feeling shame. Blame is making somebody else wrong. And in deep intimacy, that's your partner, that's your queen. So the only reason we make somebody else wrong is we don't want to feel the heaviness of the wrongness that we perceive inside ourselves. That's it. Like, it's just, if you can rebel against that, you can have the lived human experience right now here today listening in and go, like I did for many years. I remember David Aida's teaching. I've shared this with you, but it's like, it's been crucial for me. It's like the way of the superior man. And I remember like hunting David Aida down on Google and going like, this motherfucker doesn't fucking know the queen I have. Like, is he married? He doesn't know the shit I'm having to deal with. It's okay for him to write all of this bullshit in his book, blah, 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 blah. 10 minutes later, I burst out laughing, going, wow. You can have the human experience of going against this and dropping unwittingly into victimhood, going, no, but my blame thoughts are real. They're valid. Mine felt valid. 100%. If you went back to those moments and without my awareness of today, in those pockets, in those energetic memory boxes that, you know, Amore Mio is speaking to, in those moments, I felt 100% valid that she was at fault. 100%. There wasn't like a crack of awareness that could allow in, but there's another human having an experience here, and I don't have the absolute truth. I'm feeling pain, but it's my pain. I had no awareness of that. And what I hear, baby, when you're saying about, you know, the ammunition, I look back and go, yeah, with humility, with the courage to be humble, it's like, fuck yeah. I remember those dynamics. The easiest offensive protection system I had was, oh, you know, you're giving me this shit. Sure, like, with all the shit that you, sure, of course you're perceiving it that way. Again, I'm the shining light. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm a good boy. And you're finding fault. If you can find fault with the way I show up, clearly it's just because of those woundings, completely avoiding any bit of feedback. The one shift, and it's, I really want this, a definite shift slowly but surely happened in our relating. One major thing for me that I like to speak to is from what you're saying there, using ammunition, loading up. I was loading up. It's like, I'll use this subconscious. I'm going to use this next time. I'm going to use this as ammunition to hurt you. I was looking at your, I'd say, sexual abuse wound, but again, there was all the wounding. So again, sexual abuse and all the wounding. It's relevant for any couple or any husband wanting to show up consciously, is seeing and relating with your queen's wound, pre-conscious awareness or conscious practice, getting into heart-centered relationship with her, seeing her wounds as a curse. It's just a fucking curse. It's like, it was all good in the beginning. I wish I could go back to the good old days, pre the curse of these wounds, you know, dampening down all the good shit, horror wounds. And shifting slowly but surely into, wow, these wounds are actually a gift. Not that you're hypersensitive. You know, there's this thing, oh, you're just fucking hypersensitive. I can't get away. I remember you remember all the years, baby, when we had like those incredible arguments. I remember like one of the common things I was saying was like, you expect me to be fucking Dalai Lama when I give you feedback, and yet you just dose me with all of this shit like full flame, which the mark of today now knows that's feminine, baby. That's the feminine in the universe. Unboxable, untamable, in your face. There you go. Do the masculine dance. Practice embodied consciousness, presence. I did not know that. I was resentful of that. But I remember having this this victim perspective of, you're expecting me to be the Dalai Lama, and seeing that as a bad thing. And yet, what I slowly but surely came upon through incessantly listening to teachings, getting support, then into men's work particularly, was, it's not that you're hypersensitive. This is super sensitive. That this was, this insane gift of your wounding was that your nervous system was intolerable around my embodied mediocrity, my unconsciousness, which I realized there was this sort of a part where, if I lean into this and see this as a gift, like, wow, fucking wow, you know, your incapacity to tolerate bullshit levels of consciousness and a lack of consciousness, if I lean in and saw that as feedback, that's like the greatest trigger for me to step into consciousness, for me to do whatever it is, to step into my next level of self-mastery, to my next level of, you know, godliness, I now call it kingliness, into my power as a man. It's like this beautiful human being that's constantly with me, wakes up in the morning, goes to bed tonight together, and like tons in between, 365 days a year, is there to support me. And these wounds are a gift, because it was just a complete radical reframing for me, where I was like, your nervous system is this fine-tuned feedback machine. I'll give it masculine terminology. Of course, you're not a machine. But it's like this fine-tuned feedback machine where within a nanosecond, your nervous system knows my state of consciousness, my level of consciousness, like within a nanosecond, you know. And I recognize I was like geeking out and nerding out about, you know, Tibetan Buddhism at the time. And it was like, oh, you know, the master Rinpoche, wow, what an embodiment, and how he could like feel into levels of consciousness, and like, oh, just to get within, like for him to speak a sentence to you, it's like, wow, you know, like, what did he say type thing. I was like, I like with a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it was like, oh, wow, you know, Joey or Disney with the black belt and the years of experience, and they can just see that, like that crack, that growth opportunity. And I was like geeking out. I was mentally masturbating, sort of going, wow, you know, to get that feedback. And yet the exceptional doubles, like fucking bullshit double standards I was having, were you were the ultimate feedback, and I wasn't receiving that as a gift. When I slowly but surely reframed that and started going, wow, it's never criticism, it's direct feedback of, Mark, if you're not present, you're not winning as a man. You don't want to be unpresent, you don't want to be resentful, you don't want to all this bullshit. Your beautiful queen can see this in a nanosecond. Wow, that changed everything for me. I know it was not like a click to fingers. This has happened, and I'm still working with that way of relating with you. But that definitely changed everything. What I'm curious about for you, baby, is what has been the change in your inner world experience of relating with me as I have slowly but surely, humbly been doing the work to come more to transition from that your wound is a curse to your wound is this ultimate life gift to me. What has that meant for you?
Well, I believe the first and foremost thing was safety. So like, until I felt safe around you, and I think the biggest safety was brought by you actually beginning to recognize and open vulnerably to the fact that your life was just as much of a mess as mine was, and that you were suffering the results of a lot of trauma in your own childhood, in your own life, and it wasn't as perfect as you had pretended it was at the beginning of our relationship. So that was like massive, because that brought us back on an even field. Like, there isn't the savior and the broken, but there's actually two people, which I don't like using the word broken because I don't believe anyone is broken. But like, if we gotta be broken, we're both broken.
I love the term. It was Justin Sinceri who was on my show a few months ago, and he was like, "Stuck, not broken," is the name.
Yeah, his podcast. Yeah.
It's the whole thing is just getting unstuck. There's nothing broken. It's a lovely way of phrasing it.
Yeah, exactly. So we're both stuck in our own ways, but it's not just me. So that made me feel safe to go into those depths that I was speaking to. So I know even now, like, if I can go through like serious emotional messy moments, and they're necessary. And the fact that you now recognize how that is necessary for me to figure out if when I feel grief, when I feel angry, when I feel hopeless, when I feel extremely unsafe in my own world, not relating necessarily with you, sometimes still with you, but whatever, I can actually be with that. And now I don't want to make it sound simplistic, because the being able to be with a feeling and an emotion like that while requires work and training is not, I'm not talking about lingering in the shit just for the sake and then flinging crap at everyone around. That's not what I'm talking about here. But what I'm talking about is just being able to go where I need to go. And if there's tears, there are tears. If I don't need to defend in those moments, I can be vulnerable. And I don't need to be on the hyper vigilant defensive with you. You know, you're the one that is around, and I know I'm safe to go into those depths and figure out the mechanisms, figure out, or just not even figure out. I'm actually even safe not to figure it out and to just let the wave pass, because sometimes that's what healing is like, feel the wave of whatever challenging emotion is coming through and be with it, witness it, and let it pass. So sometimes there isn't a whole pile of figuring even to do, but all of that I'm safe doing. And if I need you to witness it, you're there. If I need space to be within myself, within that, that's okay too. You're okay with that. So that is essential. That has been a massive shift in the entire situation. It's like, you are bigger than the challenges I'm going through. I know I am bigger than those challenges, but you are also bigger. You don't take it personal anymore. I think that's probably the main thing. You used to take it all personal. If I had a down moment, or if there was something that was triggering me or whatever, it was always personal.
Yeah.
And it never was, but you did take it personal. And it then became personal, because obviously then you have an argument. So then that becomes personal. But yeah, that you're not taking it personally anymore.
Yeah. As in, I think every single one of our episodes, I'm making reference to inexplicable noises that are happening in the environment. I'm upstairs.
Sasha is sneezing like nuts.
Well, it's not Sasha. There's like the Darth Vader sounds of our little Stormfly is one of our cats that's in the kitchen. But just to give a little bit of context, if you're hearing this like shrill, abrasive, rash Darth Vader sort of breathing sounds, it's one of our cats that's obviously close to you, Bellissima, and the microphone. The vets, super bit of context, this is just like welcome into our lives. We're recording in our family home, we keep it real here. The vets a few months ago, as vets in Ireland tend to do, if there's any vets in Ireland listening in, yeah, you this might be politically correct to just bring this topic up now, but you just tend to hammer cats and dogs with steroids and antibiotics, even if it makes no clinical reasoning sense to do so. And then if that doesn't work, the kind offer of, here, we'll put down the cat. So yeah, Stormfly was given the offer 4 or 5 months ago of just being put down. And we were like, no way, that's not how we roll. So we're doing everything in our power with alternative vets, qualified vets with other alternative means, homeopathy, different things. But yeah, she's going through quite a severe bout of health challenges, and breeding is one of those things. So we say it to explain, not to excuse, because it's like that's part of the ecosystem of our life, and part of our healing journey has been stopping apologizing for things in our existence. That's one of our beautiful, loved, sentient beings. That's one of our tribe in the background that you're hearing. And she's welcome in this conversation. But I did want to explain it, just because without the context, it can be a little bit sort of like a what the fuck question hanging in the background. Maybe that's beautiful context. And I love, well, first of all, I love that myself as a man have managed to transition from taking it by default, trigger happy. You know, the reflex was take it personal. It's personal. You know, if you were giving out, it's criticism. You're taking me down. You're blaming me. Constantly, it was personal, to having a capacity to be bigger than that challenge. I love the way you phrase that. Most of the time, but that's the intense practice. I know there to give clarity of context to guys listening in. You know, when Amore Mio describes it as, you know, you're bigger than the challenges and you're not taking it personal now, to give great clarity, there are plenty of times that a part of my nervous system still takes it very personal. The shift is, and that me being bigger than the challenge that Amore Mio is presenting me is, I'm also bigger than the challenge of that part of me, that wounded part in my nervous system that still goes to protective pathways of, but it's you. I have a capacity now, most of the time, my practice is to just recognize, okay, I don't need to go with that blamey, spiky, icky feeling part of my mind that is trying to pick a fight. And I will actually speak, maybe we'll have a segment to speak to a communication process. Well, let's do it actually. Let's do it now. I think it's naturally just coming in. One of the ways, because I want, like we're talking about the skill set. What I really want guys listening in to get, what I didn't get back in the time. You know, when I say, hey, our default is to go to blame because we don't know how to deal with that shame. And shame is an inward feeling of inadequacy. And I really want to like touch base with you guys. You know, there's the practice of humility to pick up like where you have not shown up. And that's important. But it's also, I don't want you to go amiss and not be empathized with. There's a part of my story all the way along, and I believe you all the way along, where that part of me that has always loved Amore Mio, that's such a fucking painful thing, is to have this deep love, but have, and not know that it's a skill set, but have none of the skill set of how to express that love and how to be with her and how to love her through those times. And to feel that with the toolbox that you have at those times, that it's never good enough. And unwittingly making the mistake of, well, that toolbox, my persona, is who I am. And not knowing that it's just an incomplete skill set. It's an incomplete toolbox. You're trying to build a house and you just have a hammer. A hammer and a saw. It's like great tools, but they're not going to build a house. But that's really fucking intense to have this inner feeling as a man that your best might never be good enough. And what I want to speak to is, it does not matter where you find yourself today in your marriage, in trying to relate with the best of your intentions from the greatest love that you have. And every man has a deep, deep love for his woman. That's irrefutable, inarguable. You might have blocked it off. It might be so painful, but there's a deep love. That's why you're in the game. That's why you're listening in. So like, I acknowledge that. I acknowledge that's so important. It's the key thing is it's just a skill set. It's reawakening a skill set in you. It's learning, like, and remembering a skill set and capacities, parts of your forgotten being from childhood, etc. And it's learning skill set. I'm going to introduce now, super quickly, could be a full entire episode in and of itself. The communication, the ways I was going at communication in the early days compared to how I go at it now, which has transformed everything. We actually had at the weekend, I'll speak to it, like we had a really super intense conversation, which brought up a lot of wounding both sides. But it was using this new way that just allowed us to get through it. Tears were shed, deep empathy, deep connection. We came out the far side feeling better than we have in months together. Initially, and touch base with yourselves. Every guy when I'm one-on-one, they always go, we start having a laugh together as guys going, oh my fucking God. Yeah, we constantly do that. But in moments of heart closure, okay, like conflict, you know, the fight is on. You're taking it personal. You're in that argumentative sort of mode. You know, the fire is up in you and your queen is upset. There's three steps of communication that nearly every guy will go through. Your woman might go through the same, but I'm talking with you guys. I talk first is truth. The default is going to your truth. What I'm talking about truth is what feels true to you in that moment. But you lead with that. And if your truth in that moment is, you're to blame. If your truth in that moment is, you're at fault. It's your wounds. If your truth in that moment is like coming from victimhood, is coming at, and maybe sometimes, maybe your truth might be a super valid point that, hey, you know, how your queen is showing up. It's valid, but you lead with that. And you lead without, I'll talk about the other ones, without getting curious about what her human experience is, and then without owning your own triggered heart closure, your own lack of safety, your own, you know, hidden, your intention is to make her wrong. You might have something true to say, but you're actually coming from an energy that you're wrong. You've no truth. There's nothing valid in your perspective. You're making her explicitly wrong. What we normally do is we truth bomb in the beginning. I have yet to meet a guy that goes, yeah, in arguments, I don't have this truth. I'm just caught in, I'm right. I'm caught with my truth. And ultimately, it's right versus wrong is my intentionality. I'm right, my truth, she's wrong. That's the first explicit phase. Then the second phase is a curiosity, which is, if you argue for long enough, at some point, a part of you starts getting pierced a little bit or a lot by, oh, she actually has a point. But a lot of the damage has been done in the first phase, which is like you've been truth bombing her, you're wrong, blah, 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 argument, she's defending herself, she's offensive. And then you sort of get to a point where, maybe, yeah. But at that point, there's so much argument happening from truth bombing and making her wrong that, like, what's coming back, you might accept that there's a point, but you're like, yeah, but fuck it. I, like, you're saying it in an arseways way. It's like, yeah, 10% potential validity your side, but I'm 90% right. And then finally, we own. And a lot of times we experience remorse because we were so aggressive, we were so righteous in the moment that it's afterwards, it's the next morning. It's as we're settling down after speaking for 4 hours, arguing, that you settle and you're there and you're finally coming back into your body, that you're owning, oh man, I just got aggressive. I got so upset there. And there's a remorse. There's a feeling of, oh shit, we begin to own. But it's truth first, then some vague curiosity about your wife's, your beautiful queen's experience, and then you own. The polar opposite is how I now go at it. That's my practice. I don't always get it nailed, but it's I own first. In a deep conversation the other day, as quick as possible, I owned. It's like, hey baby, I want this. I had what ended up being like a valid point that Amor Mio could, Matilda could receive at the end, but only receive it when I practice this. In the initial part of the conversation earlier in the day, I wasn't practicing this. When I consciously reverted the order and I owned, it's like, hey, I just want to own that, hey, there's like a blame in my mind. I want to own that, hey, there's a tension in my body. I want to own that there's a lot of triggered childhood wounds that are coming up when you said the specific thing that you were saying, you know, with me. There's a couple of things that didn't land very well. I was feeling very hurt by them. And I did all of that owning. And I was like, but I'm here. I don't want to do the right wrong. There's a part of me wants to go to right wrong. I want you to know that because you're going to pick up on it anyway. But consciously with you, I'm setting intention. I want connection. And then the next phase was, baby, I have this perspective. I have my own truth. There's like, it feels really live. It feels super valid, my perspective. But first, I want to be curious about what's your human experience? And guys, time and time and time again, when I lead with owning and then I lead with getting curious, I was in tears with Matilda. It just revealed, it was this revealing. And it was like, if Amore Mio, you were feeling that I was being totally dismissive, and that was heartbreaking for me. I never wanted that, but I never knew that that was part of your experience that was causing you, provoking you to say what I was experiencing my side is super hurtful. But if I didn't do it that way, owning first, my own, put my, like, unload my gun, put the bullets on the table, owning. Matilda can feel a bit safe. Then I got curious about my beautiful queen's perspective. She was feeling seen and heard. And finally, I was like, this is my perspective. This has been my experience. Those things, when you said them, it's like, I now know perfectly well why you were like triggered to saying them, but it's like, they just hurt. So we had this complete unfolding. And I just want to say that this is skill set. Bombing with your truth first defensively, then semi getting curious, and then owning it remorsefully afterwards, and you might, may not apologize. It never works. Whereas own it, then get curious, and then finally give your perspective. Your queen is going to feel seen, heard, and safe, and then she will receive your truth. She mightn't agree with it, but she'll receive it. She'll meet you there. That has been transformative. Baby, I just want to touch base with yourself. I wanted to bring in a skill set that's like key, because communication is key to building a foundation for guys listening in. What has been your experience of the latter? Like, what has been the meaning of, as a practice, me as your husband, as your king, you being my queen, owning my shit first, putting those bullets on the table, going, hey, I have a loaded gun, I know it, I'm going to put those on the table, getting curious about you, making sure you're seen and heard, and then, and only then, landing my truth. What has been the meaning for you in the healing journey, in relating with me?
Well, that makes everything changes with that. Completely. It's that safety that I was saying before. You start feeling safe. I started feeling safe in conversations, and started feeling safe in being vulnerable and knowing that what you're, and also because when we have that approach, so when you have that approach, and is spoken into the space than when you are not using that approach, which still happens, I can speak to that. I now have the capacity to go, well, no, I'm not having this conversation with you right now because you are going at it this way and that's not helpful. So it gives me the capacity without having to shout and break plates to go, let's stop this conversation because it's not safe the way it's developing. And we know how this is going to end, which I suppose helps you going, oh, okay, I'm not coming from being curious and owning and being curious. I'm coming from just telling my truths, whichever way they come. And then you can reset and start again. And I know sometimes it's challenging. I do know that there are times where when I give you feedback on the way the conversation is going, you have to take a few breaths before using the approach that you've described. But it works every single time.
That's the key. And like, it is challenging. And it's like, this is part of like the masculine core of me. Is, guys, it is fucking challenging. Sometimes it's challenging to the levels of like that inner part of my shadow just wants to, that like hurt inner child wants. There have been moments, it's less and less often now, you know, with experience, but there have been moments early in this practice where, you know, I'm doing this practice and it's actually working, but there's a part of me that's there going, oh, I've enough of this marriage. It's like just that hurt inner child boy that just feels entitled. And what, you know, why is it this hard? You know, is it always going to be this hard? The inner child, the hurt inner boy, never wants to put the work in. So I just really want to speak to that and like honor you, baby, for saying that. It's like, sometimes it is challenging. Of course it is. Because you've got the universe embodied in the feminine body in front of you. It's fucking challenging. It's super intense. And I know it's actually more and more intense. Like, the more we play this game, baby, it's like those like the conversation the other day, part of my feedback to my queen was like, please bring more heat, bring more feedback. Like, this is the level we're both growing. But actually my biggest feedback to my queen is, baby, I need more feedback. It's not coming often enough. And hence I end up getting caught where part of the issue at the weekend was there was a lack of presence because of a certain deeply deep trauma has been brought up in family of origin relationship dynamics within me. I wasn't aware of it. Matilda was feeling, oh, I don't want to give too much feedback at this point. And it just ended up, it, like, there was a buildup of tension in the background. But my feedback to my queen is, but give me the feedback anyway. Feedback in the good times. Hey, like, what? Like, you know, it's like, it's feedback when I'm not aware. That's like, I need it. I want it. And it's like, I want to invite you to bring on the courage. And hey, there was parts where, hey, maybe, well, not maybe, I wasn't safe at times. I took it on board. But it's like, call on the feedback. Call on the feedback. Make it safe. Constantly ask your queen, give me the feedback. And like, give her so much, you know, consistent affirmation and reaffirmation that you will receive that safe, that she brings it. It's challenging. Self-mastery is challenging, but it's also exhilarating and spiritually liberating. That's the whole point of everything that we do and speak about this. So we're talking through the lens of how to love your woman if she has experienced sexual abuse in her past. But it's like, that's nothing to do with it. Your whole spiritual journey is coming into your fullest state of consciousness. So the great spiritual practitioner just uses whatever is there. And great spiritual practice, it's Carl Jung, there's no coming to consciousness without experiencing pain. It is challenging by default. Just welcome it and bring it on. Bring it on. Masculine is like, bring it fucking on. The more intense it is, the more exhilarating it is. Baby, there's one part, and we've spoken to it's sort of semi in passing, but we sort of flagged it, asterisked it. I don't know why that word was challenging to say. I won't try it a second time. I got it once. We put a star beside it that trauma-informed, what I had is like the body gets triggered in intimacy as a super important one. I just don't want to leave the conversation before nodding to it. What you were mentioning earlier on, like in different parts, like you could speak to it. There was a part of you that could speak to the abuse, to could speak to wounds, could speak to stuff that had happened to you. And that sort of at parts lulled me into this sense of, oh, you've got this under wraps. That's what you were portraying. But it comes out, the trauma is locked in the body. Like when we not, the body is not broken, to use Justin Sincerity's beautiful wording. The body or the nervous system is not broken, but it's like trauma gets stuck in the body. But it's, again, not making that personal, but can you speak to what your lived experience of it? Do you remember earlier on you mentioned certain body parts? It's like there just wasn't any feeling in them, and then at moments there's a trigger, it's like that trauma comes through. Can you speak to what your lived experience has been of that, and if we can bring that into the experiences, particular with intimate relating, when certain body parts that have had that traumatic experience years previous can have a re-triggering effect? As I think it's going to be crucial and very empowering for husbands listening in to become aware that this does happen. It's a human phenomenon and it happens. If you can speak to that, that'd be beautiful.
I suppose the main thing to understand is that whatever happens in your woman's body, it's not personal yet again. And she might not be aware of the connection that there is between what's happening within her body and the abuse. Now, my experience of sexual abuse was over 3 years. So it's like it was consistent in the 3 years, but there are other, obviously, experience of sexual abuse, which is like, boom, once, rape, traumatic, in an alley, whatever, and then that's it. So I am not sure as to how the second example remains within the body, or if there are like how it works, because what I've experienced was not a once-off big trauma. It was more like consistent in the duration of the 3 years. But what I can say is that whether you're aware of it or not as a woman, that leaves a mark. And that in every situation that leaves a mark. And my experience of it was for a very long time, I actually thought I had a lot of interest in being intimate. I had also a different beautiful set of wounds left by my mom, and beliefs that the only way to keep a man around was being sexual. So that belief prevented me from stopping being sexual. But I know that that is something that can happen too. I'm speaking with women in my work. There are women that can easily go years without having any sexual interaction. And they think there's a belief that that's just their personality. That's how their body is built. Some really truly believe they're actually faulty within their body. I thought that. I thought my lack of interest in that was being faulty. And I heard women talking about being very sensitive in some areas. And I was like, well, I am really not. And again, that's probably me being faulty. I just put it down to me being like that. And I nearly became an advocate of this is just how I am, which can lead to a whole lot of issues within the intimate relationship, especially if you're not aware of the dynamics. And also, I know that the man can take it very personal into his own lack of skills, or maybe he has skills, but she's just broken and doesn't get it. So it's to understand that the body locks in, as you say, the traumatic experience gets locked in. It can be locked in places that you have no idea. Like I've learned since, for example, that on the inside of the woman, inside her entire vaginal canal, there can be trauma locked in there, like genuine areas that have no sensitivity at all, have no feeling, areas that become incredibly sore when being intimate. And that's nobody's fault. That's not her fault. She's not broken. And that's not the man's fault that is doesn't know what to do. It's like it's genuine. There's like you can think of it as scar tissue, like, although obviously it's not a physical thing, but it becomes like a physical thing, and it becomes very, very, very real. And until there's like some very deep work being done, releasing the trauma, there's many different ways that can be done, but it really is a thing. And that also works with the rest of the body, and also her emotional openness to be present and be fully herself during intimate times. Even, I don't know, if your woman doesn't like being affectionate in public, for example, and the reason can be the trauma of the sexual abuse she's been through. So there's lots of things that can happen when you're being intimate that you think are unrelated, and you think there's something wrong either with you or your woman, and actually that's where it comes from. And I think the main thing is to understand and be aware of it, so that you stop taking it personal, and that gives her space to explore. And that's what happened to me. I know when you stop taking it personal, I could cry, you know. I could, like, I know it's like a running joke, the woman sometimes cries when being intimate, but it's not actually a joke. There's a lot of emotional waves coming through, and there is trauma that is locked in the body that gets unlocked when being intimate. And when you feel safe, when the woman feels safe, she can express it. So she can let tears come if there's need. She can let whatever emotion be through her body and be released, which is healing. So it's worth looking into it. That, as you mentioned earlier, like, about your process, these two can be like a full episode on its own, and probably not even just one. Like, there's tons that one can talk about this, but
yeah. And what's coming through me is it's the same approach. Own what's happening in your own nervous system. You're having a human experience in your nervous system, but own it. Not like it's an absolute truth, you know. In your relating with your queen, that for me was, oh, there's a you know, a feeling of shame that I'm not good enough as a lover, or there's a feeling of anxiety, you know, it's like all of these things, but not that, more me, like, not that you were causing those things. This experience of two beautiful human beings coming together intimately was revealing what was in my nervous system. So it's the same: own, curious, and then truth, where, you know, own what's happening. Get real with what's happening in your nervous system as your natural, beautiful, revealing human experience as a man, as a powerful man, as a king, which includes all the perfections, all the, you know, all the natural parts, all the trauma-informed parts, just the totality of your being. And then get curious. And it mightn't be conversational in the middle of being, of making love, but it can be just a sense of curiosity of, you know, what's this perfect unfoldment of what the nervous system of your queen is needing to express, is needing to experience. I know that just has brought like an infinitely greater sense of empathy and compassion, and has brought connection. And then, hey, if there's some truth beyond it, I think that and becoming informed, like what you were saying, baby, about the, you know, certain pains or certain sensations. I know when I was reading more and more on the topic, for me, just being empowered to be able to say to you in a moment, it's like, baby, you know, there's a little bit of sensitivity, but I'm just gently massaging, I'm working on it, because I had read, oh, this can be and does be trauma. It's a regular thing that if a super sensitive part, I was trying to explore, you know, certain types of intimate practice to deepen our connection sexually. But in the exploration, because I was informed going in, I was like, oh, okay, the pain does not mean that I'm doing it wrong. It doesn't mean, and I didn't blame, you know, Matilda's response. It was like, oh, okay, this could be and probably is trauma. And we were able to just relax through the experience, both of us. And actually, it ended up being like a profound sexually connecting, deep, intimate, spiritual experience, because it was like, wow, that was just deeply healing. Only off the back of me being informed. For years, anytime I would touch and get what I thought was a negative response, oh, pain response, oh, she's upset, just I backed off. And I backed off for like more than a decade. But it was only when I got informed, being trauma informed, knowing, ah, okay, it's like we can work with this. There's just so much here, baby. And I suppose that it comes in the coming into landing here. There's a distinction that super quickly I'd like to put in, guys, which is one of the biggest approaches that has supported me and on this healing journey with my beautiful queen, is the difference between presence and progress. There can be that part of you that needs to be acknowledged, that masculine core, which is like, you recognize you're at a point, A, you know, problem, issue, a certain part of your current day experience in intimacy together or in relationship together that isn't ideal. And you recognize it could be there's a potential of moving from A to B, and B would feel better together. And that's a beautiful part of your masculine gift to the relationship. But it's like there's a dichotomy. If we get caught like that, we're only fixing. And so just in essence, all of this, that progress, that part of you was like, hey, baby, we're here. You're having that response. I'm having this response. Wouldn't it be beautiful if we could go to B? Like that would be even more connecting. That's beautiful, but it needs to have a counterbalancing presence, which seems almost like a dichotomy, almost like paradoxically. It's like they're paradoxical opposites. I had Justin Patrick Pierce on a few months ago, and he was using the words equanimity counterbalance with desire. Desire is like recognizing something in the moment is not as you want it to be and you want something different, but counterbalancing that with equanimity. I use presence and progress. Presence is simultaneously ferociously loving and accepting the perfection of what your nervous system is experiencing and what your beautiful queen's nervous system and heart is experiencing in that moment. And it is a dichotomy. The progress, the desire part, you know, it's like I completely, ferociously love and accept everything, the perfection of you in this moment. And it's also true, wouldn't it be sort of cool if we could sort of learn certain things or heal together individually, collectively, and, you know, maybe someday, in the near future, in the distant future, experience that type of relating together. It's both together are beautiful. But if you only go with, hey, it's not right what's happening at A, I want B, that's a negation of the perfection of your queen in that moment, and she'll never follow you there. It's like a counterbalancing paradoxical part that as kings, that's a great challenge. But it's a challenge you're going to have to take on, definitely, is counterbalancing the recognition of A and wanting to get to B with like an embodied full practice of you're simultaneously completely love her and accept her now with a type of a feel that if she never shifted to a point B, you could fucking love her and accept her till forever from that moment. Baby, does that make sense to you? Just that when I'm speaking to guys, that there are two qualities that are essential for you as a queen and for queens in general: presence, counterbalance with progress.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense. And because that presence, that accepting and loving your woman where she's at and how she is at the moment, it makes her feel seen, understood, which gives space then for her to feel safe and then go through her own healing at her own pace too, because you can't force these things. I forced it, I pretended I could force it, and that made more harm than good. So sometimes it takes the time it takes, and it can be years, really. So it can be an entire lifetime. So yeah, it's precious. It's precious to be able to love your woman the way she is right now. It's the biggest gift.
And I love the context. It could be a lifetime. Guys, it could be. And in many senses, that's just the way. That's the surrendered path of self-mastery in any realm. You never get to that horizon. There's always more depth. There's always more love to unleash. And what a beautiful game to get to play. Baby, coming into landing here, like, my depth of love, my heart is cracked open. I'm yearning. It's like I'm doing it in front of a computer. I have this super hot. You've this profile picture up with your, is it the Instagram @women_reclaiming_their_fullness? So your beautiful, amazing work that you're doing with your podcast, etc. It's a super hot photo. I have to say, it has kept me feeling connected with you. I just from one room to the next, so much fucking love for you. And in awe of your power, of your grace, I'm actually tearing up as I say this. Just what you have embodied and continue to embody as a woman on this journey, your patience with me, and your courage to just give me fucking feedback and to trust your nervous system doing whatever it had to do when you weren't getting a response, that you brought us and our marriage into a certain other experience. And it was like, it just, that was the thing that just made it necessary for me to shut the fuck up and dig deep. And boy, am I glad I did. Am I grateful for every single expression of your being since we've been together and forevermore. And it's just you're supporting me becoming the man I am and continuing on this journey. I couldn't have it with a more beautiful person. So thank you for bringing that presence to me in my life, but especially in this context, again, once more, gifting your time and your amazing wisdom for the benefit of all husbands and, by extension, their queens and families listening in. That's an immense gift. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been an honor and a pleasure as always.
Heroic husbands, kingly brothers around the planet, this has been an extended version, but on such a sacred topic. If this is something that you can resonate with, well, I do want to say, well, first of all, I absolutely believe in you. If an ignorant, emotionally constipated old mule of an Irish man like myself can get to where I've gotten thus far with a lot more to do, but enjoy the type of experience as you can feel vicariously, this beautiful depth of experience now, finally, after years of deep work and with my queen, and it gets better and better. If you would like to taste some of that experience for yourself, I will unapologetically point you in the direction of the link in the description. At the bottom of every description, podcast episode description, there's a link to Heroic Husbands Men's Circles. Jump on a discovery call and make it happen. It doesn't matter where you are now in your journey with your queen. There is a skill set, a heart set. There are skills, strategies, practices, and deep work available that no matter where you are now, you can unleash a power and a capacity to be present and ferociously loving and accepting of your queen in a moment and establish patterns of progress of where you'd love to go. And she'd love, and she's actually yearning for you as her king to take her on that journey. If you can love her and accept her completely, paradoxically, exactly as she is now, and not need her to go anywhere different than today. If you want the training, the ferocious, kingly support in unlocking that unlimitless power of presence and progress in yourself as a man, as a king, for yourself, your queen, your family, in the next 7 generations, click in the link today. It takes like 5-10 seconds of kingly courage. The job is done. And the guys that are in there, a couple of those guys have had that experience and they're progressing with leaps and bounds, and they're just like 8 or 9 meetings in of the first meeting. So that level of progress is available to you. Don't miss the opportunity. Definitely today's episode, as them all, but boy, did this deliver on the mantra, the purpose, the meaning behind our movement. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day. And before you go, kingly brothers, I'm so happy to let you know that Heroic Husbands Men's Circles waiting list is now live. Online meetings supporting you up level to hero husband status. Go from fearing your best will never be good enough to becoming the competent and confident husband she brags about. Save years of needless guesswork and confidence eroding disconnection. Click on the link in the podcast description to take your first simple step to becoming the marriage-transforming hero of your relationship. Check it out now.